Hi, I'm David Freudberg, host of Humankind, and I love my work, the opportunity to talk with remarkably enlightened people about things that really matter to all of us. And honestly, the most fun I have is when I hear from listeners I've never met, often from places I've never visited, who've been touched by our Humankind program. The grants we get from the funders you hear named on our program simply don't cover all our expenses. And if you like what you hear, we're asking for your help so we can keep the program and this podcast going. Please visit humanmedia.org, and at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Thanks. Humankind is produced in association with WGBH Boston and supported by the Humankind Program Fund.
Medicare coverage is much more affordable for the same benefits than private insurance coverage. That we know. And so when you move to a system that where employers are contributing to the cost and where you're enrolling a broad cross-section of Americans, not just those who have the most costly medical conditions, the per-person cost is actually pretty reasonable.
What if people who like their current health coverage could stay on it, but others could choose a public plan like Medicare? You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Jacob Hacker, Yale political science professor and author, is passionate about making public institutions work effectively for the people because he believes government, for all its flaws, can function as an enormously powerful engine for the common good. To borrow a phrase from a different perspective, it helped make America great. The GI Bill after World War II lifted up a generation of returning soldiers. Public education is freely available to all American children. Social Security and Medicare provide for our grandparents. But for much of health care, Hacker believes, we have a ways to go, partly because of recent changes in the medical industry, which he observed through the experiences of his mother.
Well, I grew up in Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, college town. My dad was a professor at the University of Oregon in architecture. My mom was a lapsed PhD student in anthropology who was doing construction work when I was growing up, which turns out to be a pretty flexible job, as long as you don't mind your kids playing on construction sites. And she decided to go back to school. We moved up to Portland, Oregon in the early 1980s, and she went back to school in nursing and became a nurse in OBGYN at a well-known hospital in Portland, Oregon, and where I went to high school. Over the time that she was working at this hospital, St. Vincent's, it really transited, as did much of the healthcare system, from a nonprofit, patient-centered model to one that was much more focused on the bottom line. And this was ironic, given that it was an institution founded by nuns and devoted to Catholic charity, but it became increasingly more oriented towards, if not profit, at least building up large surpluses it could reinvest in expansion, and bean counting and trying to maximize revenue from every patient. And that's really a story of what's happened in American medical care more generally. You know, our doctors and hospitals are increasingly large institutions or working for large institutions, and they're increasingly consolidated. You know, healthcare is a very, very big business in the United States. It's a huge chunk of our economy. It's an enormous employer, and it's also extremely costly for businesses, individuals, and governments, which is why it's such a hotly debated issue. It's deeply personal, highly costly, and extremely important both to our own personal well-being and to the future of our country.
So all of the ingredients for a political explosion.
Exactly. And I think it's fair to say that health policy may well be the most contentious issue in U.S. politics. If you go back to the early 20th century, we came close to enacting significant health insurance reforms and legislation, 7 to 8 times.
In two cases, the political stars aligned to usher in major health care programs. One was the passage of Medicare and Medicaid in 1965 under President Lyndon Johnson.
It was a generation ago that Harry Truman said, and I quote him, "Millions of our citizens do not now have a full measure of opportunity to achieve and to enjoy good health. Millions do not now have protection or security against the economic effects of sickness. And the time has now arrived for action to help them attain that opportunity and to help them get that protection." Unquote. We're taking such action 20 years later.
Then, 45 years after that, in 2010, President Barack Obama signed into law the Affordable Care Act.
This year, tens of thousands of uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions, the parents of children who have a pre-existing condition, will finally be able to purchase the coverage they need. That happens this year. This year, insurance companies will no longer be able to drop people's coverage when they get sick. They won't be able to place lifetime limits or restrictive annual limits on the amount of care they can receive.
Passage of the Affordable Care Act and Medicare before it were landmark moments in the long journey to provide health coverage to Americans. Jacob Hacker.
But there are a string of near misses and very far from near misses throughout that period, including perhaps most faithfully President Roosevelt's decision during the 1930s not to include a health insurance program in the Social Security Act. So we had massive new jobs programs and unemployment insurance, old age assistance and old age insurance, Social Security. But we didn't get anything on health care, and that was a fateful moment for American health care because we went down a route very different from other countries, one much more reliant on private employment-based health insurance and one that was much more oriented towards high costs and, of course, one that left millions of Americans out of coverage entirely.
The United States spends on average over $9,000 per person a year on medical care, more than any other country. Next highest is Switzerland, which spends about a fourth less. But when measuring for life expectancy, how long we live, America came in the 31st in a recent ranking of nations. So the U.S. lays out an enormous amount on health. Professor Jacob Hacker at Yale.
Everyone complains about costs, but I think we tend to forget that the bottom line problem in American medical care is that the prices are too damn high. Other countries have systems in place that involve negotiation between providers and the government or between providers and quasi-public insurance companies that basically set prices because the medical market is very different from other markets. And those countries, and this is really all rich democracies besides the United States, have price levels that are, in the range of a third to half of ours. And yes, there are other reasons why our healthcare is costly. We have higher administrative costs. There's certainly a lot of waste in parts of the system. Yes, there's overconsumption of care in some other parts of the system, but the basic problem is that we spend too much on a unit basis for individual services compared with other countries, the very same services that are provided in other countries. And those countries have figured out that the only way in which you're going to have a system that's workable, given the distorted nature of the medical marketplace, is to have government thumb on the scale, pushing back against high prices and making sure that everyone has at least basic coverage. That's the big difference. We don't have either of those things. We've moved closer to having everyone covered, but there are still far too many people without coverage, and we certainly haven't put in place the kind of measures that other countries have to control costs system-wide. You know, Medicare, our health insurance program for the aged and disabled, has much more reasonable prices. They vary much less across the country and within geographic regions. But Medicare is not the whole health system. And if you look at private health insurance and private provider rates, they're extremely high, and they're also growing very quickly, and they're hugely variable. And nobody can really shop around in the system the way it is today.
And Medicare prices do rise with inflation overall, but at a much lower rate than in the non-Medicare system.
That's right. And indeed, if Medicare constituted a larger share of the medical system, I think there's no question that it would actually be controlling costs even more effectively than it has been. But it has grown. Its cost on a apples to apples comparison basis have grown significantly slower than the cost of private insurance.
And why is that?
Well, I think there's two big reasons. One is that government is purchasing health services for a very large population, and it can demand much better prices.
And from whom is government in a position to demand better prices?
Well, it's mostly hospitals and doctors. There are other providers of care, but for the most part, we're talking about the prices that are paid for hospital service and doctor services. And starting in the 1980s, Medicare changed the way it paid for services. It started paying hospitals on a diagnosis basis. So if a patient came in with a particular problem, then Medicare would pay a certain amount. And that was not the practice beforehand. It used to be that hospitals would charge for every individual service they delivered to Medicare patients. And it's worth noting that private insurers followed Medicare's lead and started adopting this approach. Medicare in the 1980s and 90s also moved to set reimbursement rates for doctors. So if you go see a doctor who accepts Medicare patients, and basically all doctors accept Medicare payments, you are going to be charged an amount that Medicare sets for all of the basic services that you would receive from that doctor. Those prices are, on average, significantly lower than the average prices in the rest of the market. But perhaps even more important, they're much less variable, and Medicare is a much simpler system. So you're saving on administrative costs as well, and you're saving with regard to the very high-end prices because Medicare simply won't pay them. They won't pay small, consolidated specialty groups for the services at the rate that private insurers feel like they have to. And that's really the story, that Medicare has moved toward a system that restrains how much doctors and hospitals can charge and standardizes how much they can charge. And, you know, most doctors, the vast majority, and virtually all hospitals accept Medicare payments because in return for those lower rates, they have a steady stream of patients who need a lot of medical care. And
because typically it's elderly patients or
that's right.
people and with disabilities.
That's right. Medicare covers the aged and disabled. And because, Medicare is a pretty straightforward payer. Think about the complexity that hospitals and doctors have to deal with the literally hundreds of different kinds of health plans that they might seek payment from over the course of a year.
We're examining how medical care can be paid for with Yale University political scientist Jacob Hacker. He devised the public option in which Americans satisfied with employer-provided care would keep their coverage, but others would be able to opt into a Medicare plan regardless of age. That option is getting a fresh look now. Professor Hacker is author with Paul Pearson of American Amnesia, How the War on Government Led Us to Forget What Made America Prosper. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. For more information on this segment, part two of Public Options, to obtain a download or audio copy, please visit humanmedia.org. The complexity of the Affordable Care Act and virtually every aspect of American healthcare today is a signature characteristic of it. People glaze over because it's mind-numbingly complex.
That's right. And healthcare is inherently complicated. Health financing doesn't have to be, right? How we pay for healthcare could be pretty simple. I mean, if you were going to sum up what Medicare does, you would say that it basically collects taxes and premiums from ordinary Americans, and in return, it pays doctors and hospitals to give elderly and disabled Americans medical care. That's basically it. You're automatically enrolled in Medicare Part A, the hospital part. Virtually everyone signs up for Medicare Part B because it's a screaming good deal. And we have, for this portion of the population, what is sometimes called a single-payer system, which is a little misleading because actually there is a little complexity within Medicare. First, you can choose a private health insurance plan in most parts of the country that will deliver benefits at least as good as Medicare's. And so about a third of Medicare beneficiaries do take that option. But those options are highly regulated by Medicare. And in general, I think that system has worked pretty well. The other complexity that is worth noting is that Medicare actually, for the most part, doesn't even administer the program directly. It works with what are called intermediaries, which are private insurance companies in many cases. So they handle the billing and reimbursement under the rules that Congress has set for Medicare. What makes Medicare effective and efficient is that it sets a consistent set of rules for the country. Those rules reflect a reasonable judgment, in my view, about the trade-offs between constraining cost and reducing access. So you want to make sure that doctors participate. You want to make sure that that the kinds of services that Medicare beneficiaries need are available. And so there's a payment advisory commission that helps Medicare think through those tasks. And the program is very simple across the country. Everyone who's enrolled in it basically understands what they're getting. So that is the opposite of the rest of our healthcare system.
Before we leave Medicare, though, you have people on both sides of the transaction. You have patients who avail themselves of healthcare services through Medicare, and on the other side of the table, you have the healthcare providers, the physicians' groups, the hospitals, the clinics, who are receiving the payments. So, looking at those two sides of the transaction, how popular is Medicare today?
Medicare is about as popular as any social program can be. Among Americans, it is overwhelmingly popular. It has both high rates of satisfaction among enrollees and extremely high public support among the population as a whole, despite the fact that it is a very expensive program, right? Everything in healthcare is expensive. So we're talking billions and billions, literally trillions of dollars. So Medicare is a very big program, but it is extremely popular despite the fact that it costs us a significant amount of money, and that's because it delivers a valued benefit. On the provider side, looking at doctors and hospitals, and remember, insurance companies do participate in the program, I think the program's extremely popular as well. You certainly don't see any calls for significantly rolling it back because, as I said, it provides a good, reasonable payments to doctors and hospitals for patients who need a lot of care. It's simple to deal with and extremely reliable. So while doctors and hospitals complain about this payment or that payment or the fact that Congress can't get its act together and authorize special changes in the program, for the most part, I think there's near universal support within the health system for Medicare as it exists.
And the point is that the doctors and hospitals who receive the payments accept the terms that
Absolutely.
Medicare provides.
That is the key. And if you're thinking about reform of healthcare more generally, it's very important that you do not give doctors and hospitals a big exit option. And the reason why that is that you can think about it, right? If you say, well, you can accept some payments or some patients, right, pick and choose, then you have this problem that doctors and hospitals and insurance companies do this as well, might only treat people who look like a good deal for them, or might not deliver certain services that they don't consider to be as lucrative.
So how does Medicare work around that risk?
Well, Medicare has a pretty simple rule. If you're a participating provider, right, you have to accept, you have to provide care to all Medicare patients you accept. And the idea is that if you accept Medicare payments in full, you're not going to go and chase down patients and make them pay more. That's a practice that can cause any health insurance system to unravel.
Unlike a uniform national health system, as has been in place for decades in most developed nations, the United States maintains a patchwork quilt of medical coverage. Some might call it a crazy quilt. And that's one reason many of us find the topic so convoluted. There are just so many special interests tugging at the vast pot of gold paying for health costs in the United States. President Bill Clinton attempted to reform the system in the early 90s, an initiative led by First Lady Hillary Clinton, but it ultimately fell short.
Well, among non-elderly Americans, about two-thirds had employment-based coverage, but the numbers have been declining throughout the 2000s. You know, it was millions of people losing coverage through their employer each year, and that was mostly because the economy was shifting away from the kinds of jobs and employers that were typically providing insurance, unionized jobs, manufacturing jobs, toward the kinds of jobs and employers that didn't provide insurance or didn't provide good insurance, service sector work, non-unionized companies, low-wage jobs. And so we had a real crisis. Essentially, we had a system that was premised on the ideas that employers would continue to provide insurance, but they weren't providing that insurance. So the challenge was, how do we expand coverage and put in place measures to control costs while recognizing that those people who still get their coverage through their employer are going to be worried if they think that a new system might threaten what they have?
And from that thinking arose Jacob Hacker's idea of a public option. In the long negotiations to draft the Affordable Care Act, the idea was seriously considered, but ultimately taken off the table, along with the possibility of universal coverage through a single-payer system. At the time, Washington leaders reached the judgment that it would simply fail to muster enough political support to succeed.
You know, if you look at what happened over the last few years, there was an attempt to create a system that was premised on substantial private insurer competition and participation, and that simply hasn't materialized. Most of the expansion of coverage has come through Medicaid, a public plan, though sometimes run by private companies, at the state level. The private insurance expansion under the Affordable Care Act has been much, much less robust. And as a result, I think many advocates of health reform, including some who poo-pooed the public option in the past, have come to the view that basically we can't depend just on private insurance to fill this gap.
What this would mean is establishing a government-run plan for those under 65, because the 65 and older crowd is covered by Medicare. The new plan would be available but not mandatory for everyone else. Employers who don't offer high-quality coverage would be required to contribute a payroll tax estimated at nearly 7%. Workers who wanted to participate would pay premiums estimated at $91 per month for individuals to $260 a month for a two-parent household. and this would compete against private insurers. It's not Medicare for all, just a similar plan for those under 65 who'd like to opt in.
The public option really responds to two huge problems with the current system. The first is that there is no insurance competition in large parts of the nation. So if you look at the health insurance exchanges set up under the Affordable Care Act, in a third of counties, there is only one insurer. So we have single payer in those counties. It's just the single payer is a private insurance plan. So that means that there's no pressure for that insurer to offer reasonable premiums. So that's the lack of competition between insurers is a huge problem under the current system. And if you had a public option, which was a national plan modeled after Medicare, available on the same terms in all parts of the country, you would immediately inject a kind of benchmark plan into the systems in every part of the country, which would be valuable even in places where you have several plans, right? Making sure that when the plans are competing, they're competing on the basis of quality and availability of care and cost, rather than on the basis simply of, you know, slick marketing or selecting healthy patients, which unfortunately is part of how insurance companies operate. The second problem that the public option addresses is that healthcare costs are going to start rising again more quickly.
Why do you think so?
Well, there's a one-word answer for that: history, right? We've never had a sustained slowdown in healthcare costs because of the way our system is set up. Essentially, providers of healthcare can charge whatever the market will bear, and the market will bear a lot. And we're going to be facing this dilemma of how to finance an increasingly costly medical industrial complex in the future. And the public plan is a straightforward way of addressing that dilemma, because Medicare has restrained costs better than the private sector. The administrative costs are low. And so having a public plan in the mix not only brings competition to the insurers, it also gives you a better ability to control costs, especially if that public plan enrolls a lot of people.
So the public option is a kind of middle ground that would ensure health coverage for people who aren't old enough for Medicare and aren't covered by their employer.
Having a public plan is, if you pardon the pun, an insurance policy, right? It makes sure you have competition. It makes sure you have some cost control. If the private sector can pull its act together and provide high-quality, affordable coverage, then the public option won't get bigger. But if they can't, then the public plan becomes a core source of coverage for Americans who don't get it through the workplace.
Jacob Hacker, professor of political science at Yale and co-author with Paul Pearson of American Amnesia, How the War on Government Led Us to Forget What Made America Prosper. Listening to Humankind, I'm David Freudberg. Studio recording by Doug Sugards. Editorial assistance from David Cruz, Ken Rogers, Kathy Graham, and in Toronto, Sarah Melton. Webmaster Brian K. Johnson. Special thanks to Tony Buck. Our program is presented by Human Media in association with Connie Goldman Productions. Program development provided by Chart Media.
To purchase a CD copy of this program, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN. That's 1-800-5-LISTEN. Or visit our website, where you can also obtain an audio download of this and our other programs and can hear selected episodes free. You can access free written materials related to this program as well. Our web address is humanmedia.org. Again, if you'd like to purchase a CD copy of Humankind by phone, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN, and our web address is humanmedia.org.
And you can subscribe at iTunes to our free weekly podcast, Humankind on Public Radio. This segment, part two of Public Options, is Humankind program number 259.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.
To hear more episodes of Humankind, you can subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast player. A new episode each week. The podcast title is Humankind on Public Radio. And if you enjoy this program, be sure to leave us a kind review at iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to support the program, please visit humanmedia.org. And at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Again, our web address is humanmedia.org. Thanks.